to create a new regulator to replace the boards, and also on procedures to ensure that the quorum of the National Gambling Policy Council. So if your inputs could be around those two items, you know, that would really assist us. Obviously, if you want to add anything else, you can, but we would really appreciate if you would stick to those two items in your input. And in the inputs, it's 40 minutes that you've got to give the input, but that includes 20 minutes of actual input and then 20 minutes of Q&A from the members. So that will be it. So in front of us, members, is the agenda. And as you can see from the agenda, we'll be hearing from Hollywood Group, CASA, Gold Rush Gaming Group, Gauteng Gambling Board, the SA Bookmakers Association, and KZN Gaming and Gambling Board. So could I have someone to move the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Biani. Seconded by? Honourable Teko. I'm going to hand to the Secretary to talk on the apologies. Thank you.
Chair, we have the apologies from the chairperson, as well as Mr. Khadebe, who is attending the SAEU meeting, Ms. Montash, who's at party business, and Mr. Esther, who's attending another committee meeting. I have not received any other apologies. And Ms. Teko will be leaving to attend the Peace and Labour. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to move straight into it. So first up is the Hollywood Group. And over to you, if you could introduce yourself and the people that you're with. Thank you very much.
Honourable members. My name is Anna Annandale. I am an advocate at the Durban Bar and I am representing Hollywood Bets together with Mr. Alan Bull, also a member of the Durban Bar. Hollywood Bets has an interest in the matters before this committee today by virtue of the fact that it is a licensed bookmaker which trades extensively in seven provinces throughout the Republic. Hollywood has made representations on the whole of the amendment bill as it was gazetted, insofar as that directly affects Hollywood's position. By virtue of the invitation to appear before this committee today, Hollywood has understood that the focus is, as the chairperson has recently explained, a much more narrow one, and for that reason Hollywood does not obviously address its other contentions and submissions here. Given the focus of this committee, Hollywood proposes to address the four main issues which tie into what this committee has identified its focus will be, which is firstly the replacement of the board, proposed replacement of the National Gambling Board by a National Gambling Regulator, issues with the transitional provisions around that change, then the Gambling Policy Council, and then the issue of the Central Electronic Monitoring System, which is provided for in Section 27, which is also one of the sections identified by the Secretariat of this committee as being a focus of these hearings. We would just wish to state at the outset that when Hollywood made its submissions originally, it did so on the basis of the Amendment Bill as published. On Friday of last week, Hollywood's representatives received what appears to be an amended version of that bill from the committee, and we are not certain what gave rise to that amendment. We are assuming it is part of the functioning of the committee in its earlier deliberations that there have been these amendments, but the status of that is not clear to Hollywood, and we apologise then that we have made submissions in the absence of an understanding fully of the status of that document. If we can turn into the first issue, which is that of the National Gambling Regulator, there appear to us to be three matters of importance for consideration by the committee in this regard. The first is the fundamental question of whether there is in fact a need to replace the existing National Gambling Board, which has been functioning since 2004, in fact even in terms of the 1996 Act, with a National Gambling Regulator, given the practical and financial implications of that change. And we then highlight something which is of concern, particularly given the focus not only in this committee but in others and in Parliament itself about governance questions and accountability within all organs of state. And then we focus on the fact that there appears in the version of Section 65, which was in the draft bill sent to us on Friday, to be some form of repetition in the text itself. Turning into the first of those issues, it appears that the motivation for the proposed replacement of the National Gambling Board with a National Gambling Regulator is a view by the DTI that the Gambling Board should be revamped and become instead a strategic trading entity of the DTI in order to regulate gambling nationally. What is envisaged in the policy is that the board would be repositioned and changed into a regulator headed by a chief executive officer. Now, it is not clear from that policy document quite how the establishment of the National Gambling Regulator, particularly as provided for in the amendment bill, will achieve this policy aim. It is not at all clear how the replacement essentially of the board with the CEO of the regulator is a revamp at all. In fact, if one looks at the substance of the provisions in the amendment bill, it appears that there has been a name change of the board to the regulator. There is a CEO appointed with very wide-ranging powers in place of a board of a number of people with experience from different fields, and it continues to function as before. So quite what the actual purpose and desirability is of that structural change to what has been in place for some years is unclear. It is also unclear quite what difficulties with the National Gambling Board this change to the regulator seeks to address. We know from the policy document that there have been difficulties with achieving a quorum in sittings of the National Policy Council, but it is not clear from the policy document quite what the difficulties are with the National Gambling Board. It is also similarly unclear what the perceived advantage is of housing the central regulatory body as a unit of the DTI, but we note that the proposed change, this name change and a transfer of power to a CEO, does not appear to us to in fact house this unit in the DTI. It remains a regulatory body under the Act. So essentially, the submission is that the amendment bill and the revision on 19 October appear to contemplate a significant overhaul of the governance structure without any real basis that is discernible, certainly to Hollywood, for that change. And with that change come certain challenges, and it's those challenges to which we wish to turn in the section we describe as governance flaws of this proposed new structure. As the members of this committee will be aware, there is presently a National Gambling Board headed by a chairperson. That board comprises anywhere between 6 and 9 members who are appointed by a variety of different ministers who then can consider the multifaceted kind of decisions inherent in the regulation of gambling from a number of different perspectives. The board is required to have a variety of expertise in a number of different matters, which is appropriate given the nature of gambling regulation. The proposed structure in the amendment bill and the revised bill sent on Friday proposes to replace that with a National Gambling regulator headed by a CEO, there is limited decision-making interaction between that CEO and the Minister of Trade and Industry, to whom the CEO is responsible. And then, in an apparent recognition of the limitations of vesting such incredible plenary powers in one individual, in this case the CEO, the Act also provides in Section 65C for the appointment by the Minister of ad hoc committees to in fact carry out the work of the regulator in various respects. Now that appears to recognise the fact that a CEO alone would be unable to perform all of those functions, but of course the fact that one might have ad hoc committees appointed from time to time has its own challenges, because one might have multiple committees running in parallel with the possibility of their functions conflicting or duplicating. There is also inherent in each appointment of each ad hoc committee a potential that that appointment could be challenged, because that will be an administrative act in terms of legislation. So each time the minister might decide to appoint an ad hoc committee, there is a very real danger that that appointment will be challenged, which can then paralyse the functioning of the regulator as intended. None of those difficulties arise with the appointment of a board which is appointed en masse for a specified term, and which then conducts all of the functions of the board. Apart from those practical difficulties, Hollywood submits that just from a governance and accountability perspective, it is undesirable that the enormous powers conferred in the Amendment Bill on the CEO are vested in a single individual. It is evident from Section 65B of the proposed Amendment Act that the CEO has significant powers and responsibilities, including responsibility for all revenue collected, all expenditure, and the management of all assets. There is also a difficulty which we have identified with the proposed changes to Section 33 of the National Act, which is one of the aspects over which the proposed regulator is to have control. Proposed Section 33 intends to confer power on the regulator to regulate what is called interactive gambling throughout the country. Now, there's a primary difficulty with that, because at present the National Gambling Act doesn't say what interactive gambling is. There were amendments to the Act which were passed in 2008 but which have never been brought into force. So at the moment, those provisions are out there but they have no force of law. The provisions in the 2008 amendment do deal with interactive gambling. We're not sure if the intention is to bring both acts into force at once, the 2008 Act which has been passed but not effective, and the Amendment Act ultimately. But if that doesn't happen concurrently, there will be a difficulty in the Amendment Act, because it will refer to interactive gambling which is not yet described or authorised. But there is a more fundamental problem than that purely administrative one, and that is that proposed Section 33 purports to allow the national regulator to essentially control, police, enforce interactive gambling across the country, including powers of inspection, license enforcement and the like. And that, of course, is a provincial competence, an exclusive provincial competence, not only in terms of the Act itself, but in terms of Schedule 4 of the Constitution. So we are concerned that if the provision goes in as currently envisaged, it will be subject to constitutional challenge, because it conflicts with the scheme. We also mention that there is an additional oddity, but we suspect this is probably a slip of the pen. That relates to the qualifications or disqualification requirements related to the CEO, the regulator. At present, what is proposed in Section 65(3), as we've got on the PowerPoint, is that a person cannot be appointed as the CEO of the regulator if they have a direct or indirect financial interest in any license or activity licensed under the National Act. Now that is of course perfectly proper, but each province has its own gambling legislation, and we would submit that in order to properly cater for probity, that exclusion should be extended to the fact that the proposed CEO would not have any kind of interest in any other license or activity under any other gaming legislation in any of the other provinces, failing which there may be probity issues which might likewise result in a challenge. We then turn to the question of the powers accorded to the regulator in proposed amended section 65. It appears that in the redraft which we received, and in this regard we refer the members of the committee to page 24 of the revised bill, it's item 27 of the revised bill dealing with section 65, the powers of the regulator. If one turns to page 25 of the revised bill, it's item G. And it proposes that there be added to subsection 4 of section 65 the following paragraphs. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee will see there are a number of powers there. The difficulty which arises is that these powers, all of them, bar the last one, sub O, conduct education awareness relating to gambling activities, are in fact already in section 65. So they all appear either in section 1, 2, or 4A. We don't wish to use the time dealing with that detail, but a comparison of the two will reveal that this appears to be a duplication, rendering the section somewhat odd in terms of reading. We are not sure if it is this duplication which causes some of the other stakeholders who have made submissions to suggest that the powers of the regulator are far more broad-ranging than that of the erstwhile board. We suspect it may be, but to the extent that it is, they are actually merely repetitions of what is there already. We were then on the issue of the change, if it is to happen, from the board to the regulator, also wish to make one observation about transitional measures which would be necessary for that change to occur in a smooth fashion in order to allow the regulator to continue functioning. Section 65A1 of the proposed amendment empowers the minister to appoint the CEO of the regulator, but there is no transitional provision to cater for what happens before that CEO is appointed. And we would suggest that it may be wise then for there to be a transitional provision in the Act that the chairman, the current chairman of the National Gambling Board, serve as the CEO of the regulator until such time as a permanent appointment has been made, merely as a temporary measure, because one can understand there might otherwise be a hiatus in the functioning of that regulator, which could last for some time. Turning into the question of the Gambling Policy Council, it appears that from the policy there have been problems identified with the council always lacking quorum, and therefore decisions cannot be made. What is therefore proposed in the Amendment Act is the introduction of Section 63A, which will provide for a deemed quorum in the event that the council is not quorum. The difficulty with that, apart from accountability, is it does not in fact address the difficulties with achieving a quorum. It renders quorum provisions superfluous, in fact, because one can take a decision regardless at a second resumed meeting. And we consider those provisions to be alarming, given the powers of the Gambling Council. For example, Section 65(4), which is not changed in the Amendment Bill, entitles the Policy Council to direct the regulator to do a number of matters, and the regulator is obliged to comply with any directions issued to it by the council relating to matters across the spectrum of gambling. And the fact that those directions could be reached essentially by one or two people on a deemed quorum has governance and policy implications which are of concern. We have highlighted the fact that in democratic jurisdictions around the world, such as in the case we referred to in our PowerPoint of IBM Canada, the importance of quorum for accountability and proper corporate governance is stressed. And although the intention may have been to achieve corporate governance, we submit that the deemed quorum provisions actually achieve the opposite. We then turn finally to the central electronic monitoring system. As the members of this committee will be aware, Section 27 of the National Gambling Act provides presently for a national central electronic monitoring system which must monitor significant events attaching to limited payout machines. What is proposed in the amendment is that that national monitoring system would be extended essentially to all forms of betting and wagering. There are practical difficulties with that, of course, because different forms of gambling in casinos, at totalizators, in bingo halls, all operate with different software on different platforms. At a practical level, it's not clear how it could be achieved that there would be one single system to monitor all of these events. But assuming that that could be done at great expense, the difficulty which Hollywood has with the provision is that it can only offer its gambling offerings on software and with systems which are already approved and accredited in terms of both national and provincial legislation. Those software programs do monitor all gambling transactions. Provincial licensing authorities are entitled to and do conduct audits of that data. They can gain access to any and all information which is already run by those software programs and retained on the systems. The reason why there should then be a central system that all of the operators will need to pay for, as the Act provides, is not apparent. The data is all available at present. The policy merely states that there is some suggestion that provincial licensing authorities are having difficulties in getting data. Certainly that has not been Hollywood's experience. It has regular audits from all of the provinces in which it operates. It in fact gives the provincial licensing authorities access to the system to the extent that they need it, and they've always derived the data which the software, as regulated under the present regime, entitles them to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Those are our submissions.
Thank you. Sorry, could you just switch off your mic?
Thank you very much. There you have it, members. I'm going to open for questions now. It's a 20-minute session for questions and answers. So, members, any hands? Honourable Elvis? Honourable McPherson? Okay, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the submission. Just a question on the interactive gambling Part B, continued governance flaws in a proposed NGR structure. Do you have any ideas what you would propose as a definition of interactive gambling to help the committee in that regard? First question. And secondly, on your last bullet point there, where we say that it's both a national and provincial competence, would you like to keep the current structure as it is, or would you have any ideas you can share with us in terms of how provincial structures can be formed to work together with national structures in this regard? Thank you.
Honourable McPherson.
Thank you very much. You asked the question whether there is in fact a need for the gambling board to be replaced. And I'm not sure in your brief from Hollywood whether you were made aware of the serious governance failures that took place when there was a board already, and today it's under an administrator, or has been for the last couple of years. So I think the question then becomes, well, what is a better structure for a entity that needs to enforce regulation in terms of compliance and protection for the consumer, and so that is what I think is trying to be achieved. My history with dealing with entities specifically around boards, since I've been an MP for the last 4 years, is one that is cumbersome, expensive, and operationally is quite lethargic to deal with some of the serious problems that exist. And that's not to say that the rationalization of boards has been entirely successful across the DTI. So I would then ask you the question, if it was not a board, what would it be then? What would Hollywood's submission be if we believe that a new structure of governance to A, protect the consumer, and B, to drive enforcement was required? I'm not sure if you're aware that there isn't a board chairperson at the moment, so because they are being run by an administrator. So a transitional sort of a clause would be difficult, because, as I said, the board is under administration. But I do think that the point of transition is well made. So if that would not be practically possible because that position does not exist, what would Hollywood's submission be in that regard then? Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you, Hollywood.
Thank you. If I might turn to the questions from Honourable Elf. The question of interactive gambling is in fact defined in the legislation which was passed in 2008 to amend the National Gambling Act. So it's in fact Act 10 of 2008. It was promulgated in 2008, but for reasons which are not known to Hollywood, it was never in fact brought into force. So there is already a definition of interactive gambling in that legislation, which we presume the drafters of this Amendment Act had in mind, and we wouldn't presume to suggest a different definition than that which already appears in the Amendment Act. Essentially, as we understand it, interactive gambling is intended to deal with what's referred to broadly as internet gambling.
Sorry, just before you come in for the second answer, sorry, Honourable Kachalia.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a question that you may have an answer to help us understand better. My understanding is that internationally, jurisdictions like the UK have a more open policy in terms of legalization and regulation, whereas jurisdictions like Australia are more prohibitive in their regulations. So I was just wondering if you had an idea of how international best practice would inform the regulation and the appointment of bodies that oversee and monitor and the like, because these are not issues of our making necessarily here. These are issues which exist internationally and then get blown by the winds of the internet. So that would be useful if you have some information for us.
Thank you. Back to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Just still dealing with... So, Mr. Bull also reminds me that in the Amendment Act, there is a definition of interactive gambling, but there is already currently a definition of interactive game in the National Gambling Act as it stands in Section 1. So read together, if the 2008 Act were to come into force, we submit that would give this committee a definition with which to work. As to the second question which you posed to us, Honourable Elf, which is the question of the fact that because gambling is a concurrent national and provincial competence, would Hollywood suggest the current structure be retained, or would we suggest any changes to work within the national system? The current structure provides for provinces to conduct their own licensing, inspection and monitoring. The engagement with national level really only needs to apply and happen in relation to national norms and standards and potentially policy formulation. We would submit that the current legislation provides for that in any event. We do not believe that there is a need for an additional structure. The National Gambling Act provides the national norms and standards, and the provinces function in accordance with that. In fact, it would appear to us that perhaps some of the difficulties which have beset the National Gambling Policy Council is the fact that if one looks at its mandate, it is perhaps admirably ambitious, but it seeks to try and create national uniformity in an area where, with submission, that's not entirely possible. Because once you have a structure where provinces have exclusive competence in certain matters and can regulate and license as they wish, to try and achieve uniformity across all provinces other than at a very high level of norms and standards creates enormous difficulty. And we would venture to suggest that trying to create another structure to achieve that aim will have the same problems as has beset the Policy Council. If I might turn then to the questions raised by Honourable McPherson, we were not aware of the challenges facing the National Gambling Board, and we are grateful for that information. We are understanding that there is a need to try and change not just the face, but the functioning of the regulatory body. The DTI has various structures in various portfolios which appear to function very efficiently in terms of regulation. One thinks, for example, of structures such as the Competition Commission, a body that is well-resourced, that has expertise across an appropriate range. You would need to have, we would submit, a structure akin to that in terms of enforcement and monitoring to the extent that a national body is required, which has proven its effectiveness in functioning. That would, however, be, I understand, a rather radical departure from what is currently envisaged in the bill. But we would submit that with the appropriate expertise and a coalescing of expertise in a structure such as that, one wouldn't have the same governance structures, it wouldn't be as cumbersome as boards are, but you wouldn't have all of the power in the hands of one individual such as the CEO. So it's not something, the implications of which I've certainly thought through fully, but it would appear to us at high level that a structure something like that might achieve efficiency without sacrificing governance and accountability. The second question that was posed to us by McPherson was the difficulties that one might have then in a transitional phase, given that there is presently not a chair of the National Gambling Board. There would then need to be, presumably, a transitional provision which allowed for the Minister to designate, prior to the coming into force of the new Act, an individual to serve. Or there would need to be a suspension of the Amendment Act and care that it wasn't enforced until such time as a new CEO had been appointed, if the regulator is to proceed in its proposed form, or some other measures were taken, because otherwise there will be a lacuna. It is not apparent to me under what provisions the board is being presently managed or administrated. It may be in terms of that legislation, but I haven't looked at it, so I'm making a submission off the cuff, that the present administrator might be appointed for a temporary time until such time as the CEO of a regulator is appointed. But I'm not sure if the legislation in terms of which the administrative functions make that possible. But that may be a practical solution. Turning then finally to the question posed to us by Honourable Kachalia, there are different regulatory mechanisms in a variety of jurisdictions, that is true. What is interesting in the South African context, of course, is that gambling doesn't start from the basis of being prohibited. It starts from the basis of being a permitted activity sanctioned by the Constitution. So we would suggest that looking at models where the regulatory model is prohibitive and tends to be exclusionary rather than permissive, such as, for example, the Australian model, which you mentioned to us, would not be appropriate in our constitutional scheme. And schemes in other jurisdictions where it is more permissive would accord more with our constitutional mandate.
Thank you. This is a follow-up question. Mm-hmm.
It's just an observation, and it's nothing personal for you, but I do find it outstanding or incredible that you weren't briefed on the current position of the National Gambling Board. And so I find the submissions problematic because they're made from a position in which the board actually doesn't function at the moment. So I'm not sure who gave you that information or why that information wasn't researched, but that's just a personal observation. I'd like to put a question then to you on how Hollywood views the current functioning of provincial boards. And I know that we have two here, I think, and I'll put the same question to them. There seems to be a view by provincial boards that while they do maintain the exclusive mandate on licensing, it is not done in a view of a national interest. Now, I'll use an example of the Mpumalanga Gaming Board, which issued a license for a betting product that is able to be marketed across the country but other particular boards will not license that same product. So clearly there is a problem with norms and standards, which does require a regulator to enforce on a provincial basis. Because it would seem extraordinary that operators in a province are disadvantaged because of the view of a board towards a specific product. How would you then view that against Hollywood's sort of reluctance to see a regulator involve itself in provincial mandates?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Hollywood's current experience with provincial gambling boards across the provinces in which it operates has been that the regulation is effective. There are products we know which are licensed by various gambling boards which can be used outside of the territorial jurisdiction of that province, but ordinarily the provincial legislation in each case has provisions which explains where those gambling transactions take place. So normally, for example, if one has an online betting application, I think, for example, of the Northwest Act, there are provisions in that legislation that says that the licensee in the Northwest accepts those bets and has them in the Northwest. Or there will be license conditions explaining where those bets are accepted, which does not then impinge on the competence of other provinces because these are activities deemed to occur within the provincial jurisdiction of the regulator concerned. There may be lacuna in other provincial legislation which creates problems, but that would be, we could submit, a problem for the legislation in each province to remedy. And I think part of the difficulty has arisen from the fact that the 2008 amendments of the National Act have never been brought into force, which seek to some degree to regulate these matters. There can be no difficulty with a regulator of some form having oversight and looking at norms and standards nationally. Our concern with the provisions in the amendment bill is that they conflict directly with competences given to provincial licensing authorities in Section 30 of the National Act. There cannot be that conflict in the legislation. If there is to be an amendment of Section 33, which is to provide for oversight of interactive gambling, then provided that those powers are tailored to allow for oversight functions and norms and standards development nationally, that would not offend the constitutional scheme. The difficulty we perceive with the present proposed amendment is that it goes too far and it puts in the hands of the national regulator inspections, issuing of licenses and enforcements which other sections of the Act, particularly Section 30, vest exclusively in the provinces. So the problem is soluble with careful consideration of the powers given to the regulator insofar as interactive gambling is concerned.
Thank you. Thank you, Hollywood. We can move right along to the next presentation, which is the Casino Association of South Africa. If they can come up and sit here. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we're about to start the CASA, the Casino Association of South Africa. Over to you. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the committee members and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Themba Ngobese. As indicated, I am with the Casino Association of South Africa. And we thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today on this bill. We have submitted detailed comments on the amendment bill. Of course, the committee will be reading the relevant sections, taking into account that the bill that we're considering has likely been amended in terms of what we're dealing with. We have made sure that our presentation deals only with the two issues that we were asked to deal with. And obviously I would not necessarily be reading our comments. I'll emphasize on the important points. We've identified 9 talking points that we want to talk to in the 20 minutes that we have, and then we can engage in some discussion thereafter. I won't bore you with who CASA is, because it is in the presentation, but we have appeared before this committee a few times. And I think some members do know us, but the rest of the details are indicated in the presentation. Going straight to the issue. The first issue that we thought we should talk about is the 2008 Amendment Act. The previous presenter has spoken to this in detail, but the reason why we thought it important, and in fact it is in our submission, is we raise it for two issues really. The first issue is the fact that this act, because it is an act, is at odds, is in conflict with the national gambling policy. And the second reason is that because it was never actually commenced or operationalized, it caused a few drafting problems that we'll allude to as we deal with our presentation. So, unfortunately, we can't leave the situation as is. We assume that the intention is not to legalize interactive gambling or online gambling. If that is the case, then at the very least, the legislature needs to repeal that act or repeal those sections of the act that envisages that interactive gambling will be legalized, because unfortunately they can't work hand in hand. And that's the clarity that is required in terms of that, and that is why we make the point. I will talk to Section 33 and 43 later on to indicate exactly what the problem is with having this bill that was not amended and the confusion that it has already starting to cause. The next talking point is the issue of the replacement of the NGB with the NGR. We make detailed comments on this in the submission, but there were 3 points that we wanted to talk to, really. The first issue was, and I think it talks to the question that was raised on relating to the governance structure that you require. The first fundamental problem that you have with what is currently being proposed is that you would have an individual, really, in certain instances with some committees assisting, that will be sitting and interrogating decisions that are taken by a collective of other boards in provinces. If you take, for example, the Housing Gambling Board, there's a board there with 9-10 members, takes a decision, let's say for argument's sake, on the licensing of a 40 LPM machine license. So any individual sitting at the NGR would be interrogating that decision and questioning the decision that has been taken by a collective body, and we don't think that is how governance should work. There's a reason why we have a collective. We have a collective because we bring in various skills and experience, so that the decisions, hopefully, that you come up with should be better informed because they come from various experiences that have been looked at almost at all the angles. The second problem that we have with the structure that is proposed is that, unfortunately, it also makes it subject to, exposed to, when people leave organizations, you might have a vacuum because, for example, it is not unthinkable that you could have the CEO leaving together with the deputy CEO, and therefore you have a leadership gap for a period, which is not ideal for running of an organization. So it's really not ideal. We do know that there is no board at the moment. We do know that there were issues around governance, but we still submit that it is, you don't dissolve a cabinet because things go wrong. What we're submitting is that the National Gambling Board, the structure, there's nothing wrong with the structure fundamentally. What you do need is you need to appoint people that are appropriately skilled, have the appropriate experience and integrity to run that board, and properly resource and fund the board to be able to carry out its function. So we honestly do not think it is necessarily to change the structure. The third point that we wanted to talk to was, this is really just a drafting issue. The way it reads, with the changing fundamentally of subsection 16.4a, 2 and 3 in particular, is that the changing of that word is, sorry, was, to is, creates a problem. Because if you read Roman figure 2, it seems to be saying that you need to be asking yourself whether this person a minor or not at a time when you're already investigating whether those winnings should be paid, which can never be wrong. The appropriate time for doing that is when the person actually gambles. That's when you want to know whether were you a minor or not, similarly with whether you're an affluent person or not. So in the submission that we make, we don't think that is necessary at all to make any changes to section 16.4a. And that's the submission that we make. The fourth issue that we talk to is on the National Electronic Monitoring System. If you ask me why are we here, I would say this is the only reason why we're here today. Because we would have submitted comments and we would have said we stick to our comments and the committee should look at those. But fundamentally, this, in summary, is really not necessary to have the National Central and Electronic Monitoring System. It was designed for a purpose. It was to cater for the smaller operators in the industry who could not afford to have their own systems. We have our very extensive systems in place that work very well, and we were able to account for the revenues that the provincial licensing authorities are able to access, interrogate, and take up any issues that are relating to the payment of taxes. So certainly the system works. It is not broken. Please let's not fix it. If the issue is that the national regulator needs to have access to the data, then it's very easy. There's 9 provincial boards, it's not a whole lot. Then the national regulator can plug into the systems that the provincial licensing authorities have and access the data real time, just like provincial licensing authorities access the data that we have. And that's the point really on this issue. That we wanted to make, and we go at great extent to explain why. It goes over a few slides, but fundamentally what we're saying is that the National Central Autonomous System should not be extended to casinos. We then comment on some of the drafting issues relating to section 27. Fundamentally, what we're saying with 21C is that it just doesn't make any sense, because it seems to be saying that the system should be able to collect and retain monitoring fees by itself, which certainly was not the intention. And the insertion of the phrase "who must acquire national license" in section 27.2 leads to confusion, and we're proposing how, if we're proposing a regime, it should be done. We're saying that proposal should be at the end of section 27.2, and certainly at the moment the National Act does not really deal how about the process of licensing the operator of the system, and that should be clearly spelled out. And then we need to have some clarity on section 27B, especially because the contravention of that could be a breach of our conditions of license. And it does require clarity. The last slide on this issue is what I think it indicated earlier on, that if despite our submissions, the view is still that the system should be extended, then the National Gambling Regulator should actually link into the current systems that provincial licensing authorities have. And if one province, which I seem to recall that it was the Northern Cape Gambling Board that didn't have the system, then it's really a question of having that particular province having a system. It's not necessary that the entire system needs to be changed because one province does not necessarily have a system that is working to address the issues that we're talking about. The fifth issue we wanted to talk about, and this is now going back to the 2008 Act. There's an amendment to Section 33 that has been proposed, but unfortunately, it doesn't make sense purely because the drafters forgot that the 2008 Act is law, but it's not operational. As a result, you can't really use it when you're drafting. So instead of that proposal of L, should actually have been a Section 33. It should have been a D, because there is no subsections D to K, because they were just never operationalized, and that's why we're saying we can't leave the situation of the Citizen Act in vacuum. We have to decide what we want to do with it. We implement it, operationalize it, or we just repeal it, or at the very least, repeal those sections that seem to be contemplating interactive gambling. The sixth issue was also just to illustrate that point around the 2008 Act, because we're talking about a provision that is actually not operational, but you're already setting it in Section 43, which cannot be in the absence of that Act being in the situation that Act is not operational. Council meetings, which is the third last point. We made detailed comments on council, but in this particular case, it was really just a drafting problem. We were just pointing out that you can't necessarily just change the word board for NGR and have addressed the reading of that section, because unfortunately, board in that case included not just the National Gambling Board, but also the chairpersons of the provincial licensing authorities. So that section needs to be redrafted to make it clear. The National Gambling Policy Council and the quorum. I think in summary, we're simply just saying, unfortunately, if this is meant to be a consultative body on issues of policy, it needs to work. We can't have a situation where you have three individuals deciding policy because others decided not to attend the meeting, because then you haven't achieved consultation. If it's not working, then it needs to be disbanded, or if it has to be kept, then quorum must be there. Otherwise, it becomes meaningless to have the council. The ninth issue is it touches on what has been indicated by the previous presenter. But in summary, really, the issue is the way that particular subsection, Section 76A1E, is envisages a situation where, in addition to what provinces are doing, the national regulators, inspectors will do the same, which is wrong one, because Section 30 says exclusively provinces are supposed to be monitoring compliance by licensees, and unfortunately the problem with that is that we can't have two regulators looking at the same thing, because it exposes us to all sorts of challenges when you have two people that have equal power to do something. We could end up with fines for the same conduct that we have, and we think that particular subsection 1E certainly needs to be deleted from the bill, and that's the point we make throughout the next two slides, and the last point, it's the point that is on that, and it just needs clarity, so that we make sure that, because that section deals with the provisions relating to illegal operators, but the way it reads, if it's not amended, we could also end up being caught up by that Section 76, capital letter A2, because in operations, unfortunately, there are situations where operators breach the rules, but not because they are doing something illegal. They are licensed to operate gambling licenses, but maybe one inspector decided not to sign a book, which is a contravention of the Act, technically, but it's not an illegal act that should be covered by that section. I think that concludes our presentation, which is just in addition to what we had already submitted in writing. and we're ready to take comments and questions.
Thank you. Could you just switch off your mic, please? Thank you. There you have it, members. Are there any questions? Honourable McPherson? Okay, we'll start with you. Honourable Mashlobo?
Thank you very much. I just want to understand, does the association support interactive online gaming if it was actually brought about? You made an interesting statement when you said that you don't dissolve the cabinet just because it's dysfunctional. Well, I'd make an argument that you actually would, because what do you do if you've got a dysfunctional cabinet? You cannot operate, so you have to dissolve it. And I just want to understand, how does that relate to the functioning of the board? Because the board was actually corrupt. So I fail to understand how you sort of advocate for continued dysfunction. With respect to point four, I want to understand, have the PLAs agreed to your view with respect to a regulator just simply plugging in to their data? And then with respect to your also on the licensees accessing the prescribed data on the SEMS that relates to other licensees, machines or games, why would you want that? Of what benefit is that to casinos? So if you can just help me understand that. Thank you.
Honourable Mashlobo.
Thanks, Comrade Chair, and thanks for the presentation from Mr. Ngobeni. Probably, I see in a number of instances there is a reference, Chair, to objection to certain clauses. It would have been very advisable, where if you have a different view, I'm not sure on the other submission whether did you say what is an exact proposed amendment, because it then becomes more useful. Secondly, we are making a reference to this, I suppose it should be slide, the one that is having subparagraph one, the issues of between the policy and the law. Even if the policy can say something, until the law, you are referring to National Gaming Policy 2016, Until the law gets repealed, it remains the law, because policy doesn't trump the law. If it's a bad law, then you will be in a position to change it. When it comes to the issues of the PLAs, I could see the posture that is being taken. But the reality, we are not a federal state. We are not. And that's the path we choose. The national legislation becomes an overarching legislation. Therefore, they can't behave in a federal way outside the national legislation, because I could see the number of pages that are coming there. Therefore, the view that you'll be subjected to two authorities is probably to say, what powers can be vested on the PLAs vis-a-vis the NRG, because that's how, from a policy point of view, you'll have to. But to create a view that provinces, they're empowered by law to do their own legislation because the conditions might be different. But if there's a national legislation, there is always the view that they should be in a position to to do an alignment. The last one, probably last two, Comrade Chair, is the National Central Electronic Monitoring System. I just want to know what are these concerns, because the National Central Electronic Monitoring System still has to be designed. And the regulator will be needing certain information. At this stage, the ones that we are using in casinos, what if the regulator says the fields that are there or the capability that is there, is it adequate or not? Well, this one, I'm not a gambler, but I'm told, because it looks like there is a view to protect your clients or your members. Remember your members in the mail, they are always on a brick and mortar where they are housed. And I'm told there's a fourth industrial revolution. And we can't regulate the fourth industrial revolution that people all the time, they must come to the brick and mortar to do gambling. Because that's what Mr. Also Honorable McPherson was raising, the question around online. And I'm not sure what are these concerns are, because one of the things that technology has always given problems or advantages. You know, there was a very powerful company when we were very young. It was called Kodak. They used to be at the cutting edge in terms of producing photographs. And it will take time. You will take a picture today. Someone will go for a number of days. They will not come back. But then there were advances in technology. And people welcomed the developments in technology. But I'm told that there was a tragedy. Kodak never wanted to adjust. Ultimately, they managed to wind down. And it does something to ponder, because if we say there are certain things we must not allow them to happen, in other words, we want to limit people, while at the very same time, in this kind of a society we live in, there are a lot of endless opportunities, and we should not shy away from them. Rather, we should be in a position to adapt now, so that when the time comes, we are ready, so that it doesn't actually impact on us negatively, because we're not going to stop it. It has to be welcomed. The question of the use of technology, as those who are proponents of the fourth industrial revolution. But generally, Chair, we must think they are very assisting the input that is there, but I would have loved to see specific to see where you have concerns, what should be your wedding looking like. The same thing around quorum, what percentages are we looking at? And these things of people not coming to the council, it's just a matter of mentality of regionalism, issues of a regional interest. You think because you want to promote something at the expense of others. Probably we need to be able to say what then become the rules for the national interest rather than provincial interest. Because if others, they don't want to, they think it disadvantages the province. We're not states like in the U.S. You know, we have this state of this, state of this, state of Malang and so forth. Just one South Africa. And then people choose not to come. Probably we'll have to have a mechanism that if people are actually are perceived or really they are pushing a particular interest, what do we do? Because they can collapse this collective nature that you're talking about. But more, you can find that is more of a narrow interest that seeks to collapse the bigger picture. Therefore, there has to be an injunction to say, what do you do? Ngiyabonga, Comrade Slaa.
Thank you. Over to you for response.
Thank you, Comrade Slaa, if I'm allowed to say that as well.
I think I'll start with the first questions first raised by the honourable member. On some of the issues I was misunderstood, I'll get this opportunity to clarify. I think the first question was, would we support the legalization of online gambling? Certainly we will. It has always been our view. We've taken a neutral stance. We've always said, look, if government doesn't want to legalize online gambling, well, that's government's prerogative. But if they outlaw it like they do, then we expect an equal effort in making sure that doesn't happen. But unfortunately, it has not happened. It still continues. And unfortunately, that industry thrives in this country despite the banning of online gambling. So certainly, we will support it. If you ask us, that's the future. That's how the younger generation prefer to do their things. They do their things on the internet. Just for an experience, there's a big debate in the industry at this stage, the casino industry, about what do we need to do to remain relevant. Because at this stage, if you look at 20 years from now, we are under threat and we could actually be facing extinction unless we do something drastic. The kind of games that we currently offer on slot machines do not interest a 22-year-old. They always walk into the floor, might get deflated for a couple of hours, but it's not what they're looking for. They're looking for more video, you know, like the video game type machines, you know, the Xboxes and what have you, for those that actually are into gaming. So certainly there's that debate. So if you ask us, that's unfortunately the future. It has to go at some stage. We know the industry is thriving, so we certainly support the legalization of online gambling. That's the first question. The second question, maybe my choice of word was wrong. By dissolution, I meant, in the sense that dissolution could mean firing the entire board and replacing it with a new one. That's what we mean. So you dissolve it, but you don't change the institution. You don't kill the institution of cabinet in my example, because it was not working. You reconstitute it with different people with different skill and different experience, and that's what we were talking to. But certainly you don't change the institution purely because things went wrong in that institution. From a governance factor, we have not seen anything fundamentally that is wrong with having a board that regulates gambling. As obviously this is particularly supported by our experience with the provincial licensing authorities. That's to answer that question. I hope I've answered it. We were asked whether provinces have agreed to allow the national gambling regulator to link in to the systems. We certainly have not had that discussion. We don't know what their view will be, but what we're indicating is that it's not that we're trying to hoard the information, we don't want to share the information. We're just saying that there is a system currently. If the National Gambling Regulator has to assess it, that's probably the best way of doing it, as opposed to creating a whole new system just to cater for that. So I don't know whether I've covered at least a full set of questions.
Sorry, there'll be no dialogue. You don't have dialogue. Honourable Member.
Can I just help?
No.
Can I just help the gentleman?
Just hold on before you just jump in, please. So,
my apologies.
Thank you. So, Honourable McPherson, please, you can come in.
You made a suggestion that other or licensees should have the opportunity to view other licensees' data.
Sorry, before you come in, Honourable Mbuyani.
No, thanks, Chair. I think on the question of quorum, firstly, it's an obligation for every member of the board to attend a board meeting. Then, secondly, I'm not so sure what is your view or suggestion if a board member choose not to attend a board meeting or a council meeting deliberately, so that any decision cannot be taken around or in the viewers. That's my follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you to continue those answers. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the last one was misunderstood. It is a slide on the NCEMS, it's slide 404. We're saying of that particular licensees, for example, if I'm a casino licensee, we're saying if it is going to happen, then at least as casino A, I should be able to access my data, not other licensees' data. That's what that slide says. Going on to the questions by Honorable Mahlobo. It's true that policy is not necessarily law. We mention policy simply just in the context of saying we assume, because the policy says there will be no internet gambling, then if that we justify then in expecting that legislature will then repeal the 2008 Act because it conflicts with the policy, or at least those sections that deal with interactive gambling. That was really the only point that we're making there on the policy. In our comments, we do detail exactly what we propose should happen in the detailed comments, which is why I just didn't, we only had 20 minutes and I was trying to talk as much as possible on the comments. That's why we didn't repeat everything. And then on the PLAs and the thinking, or at least the narrative that we could be promoting federalism, we are not. All we're saying is, at the moment, the way the current structure is, you have the provincial licensing authorities that license, receive applications, conduct investigations and license, and they are responsible for making sure that there's compliance with legislation. Then you have the national structure. The thinking with the national structure was that it would then be an oversight body. It would look at what the provinces are doing. So it's not that we're proposing that there should be the provinces and not the national. They both need to work together. So you have provinces that do the work, and then the oversight body being performed by the national regulator. That is what the current law says. The problem with that particular provision is now saying you could have an inspector from the National Gambling Board doing exactly what the provincial inspector is doing. Now, the problem with that is that if I could make an example, if there is a form to be signed and it needs to be signed by three people, as is normally the case in a casino environment, you will then have the provincial inspector finding that breach and then a national inspector coming also finding the same breach. We're saying they can't work like that, and one needs to be responsible and another one needs to provide an oversight role. That's really what we're saying. We're not promoting that. We're not saying national regulators don't have a role to play in provincial regulation, because it is one country after all. We agree with you on that one. And then I think we're misunderstood. We're not opposed to the national electronic. It's a long wait. We're not opposed to the system because we're trying to hide anything. We don't want anything with the data. We're just saying, at this stage, we're not convinced of the necessity for developing a whole new system. There is data that is available, and the people that are responsible for collecting revenues and auditing are accessing it, and certainly we would not really have been provided with a good reason why we need to have a whole new system when the current systems, all operators at this stage have a system that they're operating on, and the system is working, and we've not been convinced as to why we need an additional system to do what we currently do, and if I may say so myself, we do well. That is really the concern around the national electronic monitoring system. We're not opposed to data being available. We actually do at the stage. Honourable member, if you don't know, the kind of questions that we get asked by provincial gambling boards is, who's your sister and who's your wife, and their details, and do you pay taxes? We used to being open, an open book, so we're not hiding anything. It was simply just, is there really a need to have a separate system than what we currently have? In terms of what happens when people don't attend meetings, and we won't profess to have all the answers, but the fundamental problem that we have is that if you're going to have a body that takes decisions on policy matters that affect us, at the very least you need to have the meeting attended. We unfortunately do not control what provinces do and whether or not they attend the policy councils. We understand that it does not work well. We know that because that's what the Gambling Review Commission report says. But certainly we don't think it's a solution to then say even meetings that are not attended simply because it is a postponed from a previous meeting then should have the right to take these binding decisions that affect the future of the industry.
Thank you. Honourable McPherson.
But surely you must concede that at some point a decision has to be taken. And if those meetings are in quorate continuously, how do you take those decisions? And the problem lies in that each province has its own vested interest in gaming policy because they derive a direct benefit through taxes. So if there's something on the agenda that doesn't suit them, they just won't go. So at what point does the province's interest override progress and a national interest? And I'd like to get your comments on that. The discussion around a board versus a regulator, it keeps being couched in an idea of, well, we should rather have a board over a CEO because it's a problem. You know, there's governance questions. But to be honest, in the boards that have been converted to a CEO structure, which I think the department colloquially calls the rationalization of boards, and I'm going to use the credit regulator, and the credit regulator is not without fault, and I have enough problems with them. But to be honest, I've never heard a financial institution say to me, well, we don't like the credit regulator's governance structure, we should actually have a board. Not once have they ever said that to me. And so I don't understand why it is a problem in the gaming industry to have a CEO, but it's not a problem in the financial services industry. And they don't have a problem with governance. So what is it actually really about? What is the real opposition to having a regulator? Because I don't buy the governance thing, to be perfectly honest. You know, what are you really getting at? What is the real issue? Is it a concern, and I suspect it's a concern about a regulator overreaching into provincial mandates. That's what I actually think the real concern is. Or am I missing it from the casino's point of view?
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of the quorum, I think I did say we don't profess to have the answers. But I think the concern that we have is, like indicated earlier, is what is currently being proposed really is that you could then have two, three members sitting in a meeting and deciding on a policy that affects the entire industry. And that's it doesn't sound quite right. We know other provinces have a right to attend, but if they don't attend, then you'll have a decision coming out of four members of the council. It just doesn't sit well from a governance point of view. I think that's the first one. And then on the issue of an example was made of the National Credit Regulator. Unfortunately, it's not quite comparable. The way this industry is regulated, you have provinces that have boards, and those boards are constituted of men and women, a number of them, and anything between 7 and 10, with various skills, from legal, social, tax, finance, and what have you. So you have this board that have all sorts of skills and experience that when they look at the matter, we believe would look at it holistically because they're looking at various facets of any particular issue that you're dealing with. So, and especially if you're developing policy, you always want to have
the best input, and you'll have the best input when you have people from different spheres of work that are looking at a particular issue. Now, you'll have those people deciding on an issue which could be interrogated by an individual sitting at a national gambling regulator, which is not the structure necessarily in the financial services, at least in the space of the national credit regulator, the example that was made. And that's fundamentally the concern.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your input. And now we're going to move to the next input coming from Gold Rush Gaming Group. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My surname is Drew. I'm an advocate.
Sorry, just a moment. Sorry, we're just going to take a 2-minute break. Sorry about that. And if you could move to the middle.